Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined by none other than Brian Capron, who played Mr. Stuart Hoppy Hopwood. Brian, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
It's a pleasure to be here, Neil.
Thank you for coming on. So what we'll do, Brian, is we'll start the way we start every episode. And if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
When I went to school, I went to a grammar school in Sunbury on Thames. Uh-huh. And in those days, you didn't have drama on the curriculum, but you did do school plays. And a feature of my career is when people have dropped out, I've been lucky enough to suddenly step in. So what happened was I auditioned for a very famous play called The Crucible, which you might have heard, by Arthur Miller. I went up to audition for it, and I didn't get any parts at all. And my best friend got a part with one line, which was the deputy governor's arrived. I can even remember it. And I was so jealous that he got a part. And then I didn't get a part. And then the main guy playing a character called John Proctor, who is the main character in the play, suddenly left school. And for some reason, my English teacher suggested me, and I got the part. So, I was very naive, really. I didn't even realize that people applauded at the end of the play, and people pushed me forward, and I felt the applause grow bigger. I thought, oh, this is good. You know? So then a friend of mine who was in the year above me, we both decided to go to do a couple of amateur things. We did Billy Liar, for instance. And then someone said, you should be an actor, because we had no idea how to be an actor. I lived on a council estate in Staines, you know, near London Airport. We found out that you went to a place called the drama school if you were lucky enough to get in one. So eventually I got into a place called Lambda, the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, which was just, I don't know how I got in, to be honest, to me, it was unbelievable. And it changed my life completely, you know. I had three wonderful years in London, this is late 60s. This is how long ago it was. But imagine, London then was fantastic. So even if I had never become an actor, it was fantastic 3 years.
Brilliant.
And I went straight into repertory theatre for 3.5 years with people like who are well known now, like David Suchet, John Nettles, who is in Midsummer Murders for years, and Bergerac, all that, you know, and Robert Lindsay, lots of very good people at this theatre, and Bob Hoskins, for instance. Then I did 3.5 years in rep, and then I luckily got a very good agent and began to go into television.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously, when I've been researching this episode, your television CV is quite phenomenal, to be honest, because when I was looking, if you sort of think of really big sort of British television programmes, you've been in loads of them. And I have to say, the first one on your CV on IMDb is a programme which, in my opinion, has got, after Grange Hill, has got the second best theme tune ever, which is Zedcars. And as an Evertonian, I have to say that. I have to say Zedcars has got the second best theme tune ever. But yeah, so when you look at Zedcars and the General Hospital and Dixon and Doc Green, and there's just so much. But obviously,
I did pretty much every police program, I think. Yeah, Taggart, LaBelle, Dunamore.
And then, of course, like Blake 7, another one, which was, you know, massive, wasn't it?
Yeah, big thing then. During the 70s, since I got a very good agent, a good friend of mine, I don't know if you know, Alison Steadman's a very famous actress. We were at the Northcote Theatre, and this play transferred to the Bush Theatre, and I couldn't get an agent. I had a bad agent, and a friend of mine, who actually eventually became the right-hand man to Stanley Kubrick, and he had a very good career then. He brought his agent along, and it was a big thing for him to do. And I didn't think anybody was going to come. On the last night, this guy came. I had all these reviews in the Times and the Telegraph. It was such a great play. And He came along on the last night. I was really depressed because I thought this is my big chance, and he hasn't turned up. And he turned up on the last night with an agent. The agent came up to me and said, "There's my card. Come and see us on Monday. What do you want to drink?" And that completely changed my life. And that's the
Wow.
luck you need. That's the luck you need
Yeah.
and connection you need, you know, in this profession. And here I am, 50 odd years later.
Yeah, brilliant. One other thing I need to speak to you about here is Noah's Castle, which was,
Oh,
you know,
yes.
the Mike Read program. But obviously, Lee MacDonald was in Noah's Castle.
Ah, well, I can't remember him being in that,
Yeah,
but
because
yeah.
he played Mike Read's son in Noah's
Ah.
Castle. So obviously he was in that. So okay then. So you've done lots and lots of different things. So how did Grange Hill come about then?
Well, I think I remember quite clearly. I was in 1979, and I was actually doing a play at the King's Head, which is a fringe theatre in London. And I got asked to audition for I think for 6 episodes, I think, as a replacement teacher for a very popular teacher who'd left in the first two series.
Oh yeah.
I was really, you know, desperate to get this job, and you know, I had two young children, you know
Yeah.
what my profession was like. I got on with the girl who was going to direct it, the woman who was going to direct it, because she had been up to that point a first assistant of or first AD, as they call them, or a floor
Yes.
manager, and she had just been promoted. This was her first directing job,
Right.
and we kind of got on quite well, and I got the part, you know, and I was absolutely thrilled. And of course, it became popular, and I went on to do four series, and then
Yeah.
unfortunately, my agent made me give it up.
All right,
But
okay. Well, we'll get on to that.
get on to.
We'll get on to that one a little bit later on. So yeah, so you got the part of Mr. Hopwood,
Yeah.
the woodwork teacher. Whenever I'm putting an episode of the podcast out on social media, I'll give clues to who it is, like a guess the guest competition. And the person that's the first to guess who the guest is going to be, I give them the chance to ask a question to the next guest. So this question is from Michael Sylvester. Michael is a big, massive Grange Hill fan. He's really busy on all social media over all the Grange Hill things. And his question is, Mr. Hopwood was a master at wood metal DIY work. How skillful are you in those areas?
Well, interestingly, one of the only what we called O levels in those
Right.
days, one of the only one I got, I only got four first time round,
Right.
and one of them was woodwork.
All right, okay.
So you see, I had the qualification.
Yeah, right, brilliant. Brilliant. Okay. So then, yeah, so you've just said there you were coming in as a replacement, and I'm guessing it was a replacement for Michael Percival.
Yes,
Right.
that's
Oh, okay. Who played Mr. Mitchell, of course. And the very first scene that you're in, you were telling off three of the lads for given someone the bumps because apparently there'd been some terrible accidents beforehand where children had been given the bumps. And I just think that's just a brilliant thing for teachers to be saying, like, you know, you're not aware of the accident that's already happened. But can I just ask as well, were you aware of Grange Hill at all before then?
very much so, because
Right.
I had two girls,
Right.
and it was their favorite program, and they used to watch it with their grandmother,
Right.
and they used to go on about it, and you know, being an actor, I'm jealous of any other
Yeah.
got work, you know, and I wasn't really interested, you know, but they were
Yeah.
saying it was really good, and it was really different, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was more aware, perhaps, of the second series, that they were so engrossed in it, and they loved it, and they talked a lot about it, you know. So suddenly it was a very big show very quickly. They only
Yeah.
did about 7 or 8 episodes in the first series, I think, and then they put up maybe 18 or something in the
Yeah.
second one. And because I was up for the third one, and as I say, there, Michael Percival, I don't know why he left, but there's a case in point where I've replaced someone, you know. Someone, again, you know, theme of my career. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. And Mr. Hopwood loved using the classic line, "Hands up if you're not here today," which is a massive thing. Teacher, like I work in a school, and teachers will still say that now. Hands up if you're not here today. And so in the first series, because Grangedale was still in its infancy then, the teachers were sort of like, they didn't tend to get their own storylines. Usually it was all about the kids, and teachers were sort of there for, like, you know, moving scenes on or facilitating scenes and things like that. But Mr. Hopwood kind of had one in your first series where it was all about getting the children out and about, and the environmental, you know, the outdoor centre and things like that. And like, obviously the first time he took the kids out on an to the environment, it was just to some like waste ground, but then the kids wanted to go again. So when they did take them out to the countryside, it was this big thing. But then obviously disaster struck, and when Alan had gone off smoking, there was a fire. And when you watch that those scenes, you just think, oh, could you imagine that sort of thing happening now, where all the kids decide and the teachers decide, we'll go and put the fire out. You just think, oh my God. Because there they all were, filling all the milk chains up and throwing the water over the fire. I have to ask this, as it was the 70s, was there much health and safety when that fire scene's getting filmed?
Well, not as I remember. I mean, a lot of the fire, of course, is you've got stunt people there who are doing it, and it's all under control. But I have to say, that particular episode made my character, and I don't know if you realise, but only about 3 or 4 episodes were ever shot on film. Most of them were just little bits of film on 16mm, and then were in the studio.
Right.
So that particular episode, I always loved to do that because they looked so good. The filmed episodes always looked so much better than any of the other, because there wasn't high definition video in those days. So the filmed episodes always looked great. And that was a fabulous story, if you remember, because it was so subtle in that the kids, they saw the boys smoking, I think, or whoever it was saw them smoking. And then she had trouble with her bra. Was it Linda? It's Slater.
Linda Slater and Rudy Davis was the other one. Ruth Davis.
Oh, he was great. What a character. I mean, Rudy, I mean, she was, I thought she was an amazingly interesting person as well. They were such great kids, but that was a fabulous story with a great arc. I think it was one of the, it could have stood out as a play on its own, a little film on its own.
Yeah.
So I was very lucky to get that particular episode. Where you suddenly saw all my character, if you like, and it allowed me a lot of things, you know. So I got established in that episode, really, and I was grateful for it.
Because then it sort of moved on then, where they were trying to get, you know, an outdoor centre for the kids to go to, like, sort of semi-regularly, because Brookdale, the other school, had one. And Mr. Hopwood said, it seems a bit ambitious. And I'm thinking, it seemed a bit ambitious in the 70s. As I say, I work in a school. That seems a bit ambitious now, you know, for a school to have a centre like that. But they got the centre at the farm, because the farmer had said, you know, thanks for helping putting the fire out. But they had to do all the work and all that. And there was a scene where Mr. Hopwood is talking to Mr. Keating, played by Robert Hartley. And Robert Hartley's there as like the devil's advocate, you know, saying, well, have you thought about this? And have you thought about that? And you get the sense that Mr. Hopwood is really on the kid's side. He really, really is. But obviously, Mr. Keaton had to be the other one to sort of argue the case for the head teacher and the school. Now, we've never really had anyone on before talking about Robert Hartley, but he must have been great to work with.
Well, he was, you know, a real old proper actor.
Yeah.
which, you know, was quite rare in the show. You know?
Yeah.
He was just such a lovely person. And he was so grateful, I think, for the job, you know, being quite old as he was then, you know, really. He was probably too old even to be a deputy master or whatever he was. Because he was filling in while they got, you know, before Gwyneth Powell came in. So, yeah, no, he was absolutely lovely to work with. And I got on with him very well because I had a lot of respect for an old traditional actor who'd gone back years and worked like I had, you know, a little bit, you know. So yes, no, he was a charming man, and always bright and chirpy and positive, and you know, just quite fun because he was quite a character,
Yeah,
wasn't he?
I mean, I love his voice, like I really do, because there's no one else in the history of Grange Hill who had a voice like his. You know, he was a,
No, no, no,
I
no,
yeah,
no. Yes.
yeah, I just thought he
Yes.
was brilliant. He was brilliant, and then you know they eventually got the outdoor centre. They raised enough money for the outdoor centre, and they went. And when they got to the outdoor centre, there was a bit where they had to, you had to knock a wall down. Because they were trying to, because it needed doing up, basically the hut that they'd been given. But again, you're there with a sledgehammer knocking a wall down. I was wondering, you know, quite a bit of manual labor again. Was there any sort of health and safety in that
To be honest, I can't remember anything about that
Right,
at all. But
okay.
always, obviously, people were careful, but not as careful as they are nowadays,
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
know.
And there's a bit where the outdoor center basically sort of. The storyline of it went because Kathy Hargreaves had put her foot. She'd been upstairs when she'd been told not to go upstairs, and she put her foot through a floorboard. And it turned out that there was all sorts of dry rot and woodworm in there, and it would have cost too much to get redone and get fixed. So it was eventually scrapped. But then the idea was put forward of sharing with Brookdale's. And Brookdale had said, oh, they would agree with it on principle. But then it was never, ever mentioned ever again. It was gone. Now, what I've heard, and I don't know how true this is, that series was 16 episodes when it should have been 18. But there was something to do with the big cuts at the BBC, meaning that the last two episodes had to be scrapped or something. Can you remember anything about that?
No, I can't. I mean,
Right.
I imagine that, yeah, I imagine that was something to do with them cutting back at that point. You know,
Right, yeah.
because I probably had, I think my first lot was like six episodes.
Right.
And then from then on, I featured a lot more
Yeah.
in the later
Yeah.
series.
Cool. Okay. And there was one other thing I wanted to talk about. There's a bit where there's a woodwork lesson going on, and this is when you're with the younger ones, so the likes of Pogo and Andrew Stanton's sister, and Tracy Edwards was there, played by Amanda Mealing as well. And Pogo made fun of a toast rack that Tracy was making, so Mr. Hopwood grabs him by the ear. You know,
Yes.
when you're doing stuff like that, are you mindful of the fact that this is a kid and I'm grabbing him by the ear, and it's got to look real as well? Do you just go for it, like?
Well, I think that was the whole thing about Grange Hill, wasn't it? I mean, up to that point, I mean, Grange Hill changed everything, really,
Right.
because up to that point, you just had posh schools represented on television. And suddenly you had real people speaking in a natural voice, in natural dialogue. And that's what I loved about it, you know. And I learned a lot as well. And you rightly said, going back to what you said before about the teachers, this was all written from the ch for the kids and from the kids' point of view, which was absolutely right. The only teachers that had kind of storylines, which was the most important thing for the adult teachers in it, was you had a class. So if you had a class, two or three of you had classes. So, you know, I think probably Miss Mooney, James Wynn, you know, that they we had classes, so therefore you had kind of a storyline. From an acting point of view, what was interesting from my point of view was that I thought the kids were so natural, and I thought I want to be like that. And I was, you know, I'd been doing television for quite a time, but probably was still a bit actory. And
Right.
so what I did is I made my character very informal. So obviously most of it's written for you, but if I contributed anything with my character, I wanted to make him very informal, a very listening person, and very casual. So, you know, sitting on the end of a desk listening to a kid or whatever, so that I became more natural. So it taught me a lot about television
Right.
acting, which is not, you know, going over the top and being as natural as you
Yeah.
possibly can. And so I was very lucky early in my career, I think, to work with those kids, because they don't think about acting. They just are, you know. So sorry, I just thought of that as
No, no, no.
I mentioned it earlier. Yeah.
So yeah, so obviously, grabbing Pogo by the ear, and it
That's
was out.
bad. That's not as bad as when I had to when I smacked Alan
Well,
Humphreys,
there
mate.
we go. I was literally, I'm moving on to that now because in the next
Look.
series, Mr. Hopwood obviously catches Alan smoking in the class, and everything about that scene is brilliant. The fact that he's there, trying to hide the fact that he's smoking in his desk. But
Yeah.
the fact that Mr. Hopwood doesn't say anything initially, obviously, he's looking to make sure he's doing what he thinks he's doing. But then the slow walk up, and then you stupid idiot. And then
Yeah.
the crack round the head. Now, obviously, George Armstrong, I mean, sadly passed away recently. But I mean, when you've got to, as I say, you've got to smack him round the head. Is it one of those things you just go for, like?
No, I mean, actors love all that. They love all the drama, you know. We thought it was a great thing to do. And I thought, obviously, Mr. Hopp was acting because he cares about him.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's acting like a parent in a way,
Yeah.
because Hopwood is very understanding, and so he's very disappointed in him. And I would say that George was one of the loveliest people, and what a warm, lovely boy he was. And
Yeah.
always liked him enormously, and I could say he had nothing negative about him, you
No.
know. Such a positive, lovely boy, you know, as a lot of them were, but he was particularly so. It's such a nice personality.
Everyone has said the same. Everyone has said the same about him, yeah. Because as I say, you really make contact when that smack goes in. It's not fake, there's really made contact. But then that then leads on to the fact that Hopwood had to tell Alan's dad, and the next time we see Alan, he's got a black eye, and Alan then says that he was giving up smoking. He was definitely giving up. But then that was really good there because, as I said, it had never been done in a kids' program before,
No,
as you said. The
never.
fact that the struggle then for someone to give up smoking, showing the fact that even at a young age, no matter how long, that you can become addicted really easily. And I just think we always say the fact that Grange Hill was groundbreaking, but there is in
Was.
a kids' TV program, it's showing someone not only smoking but trying to give up and finding it really hard. Too as well, working again,
That's the thing about Grange Hill. It addressed all of these issues that were relevant to young people, which no program had come near that. And if you look at, interestingly, the genesis of soap opera in this country, what people don't realize is that Grange Hill was groundbreaking because the soap operas that came after it were Brookside,
yeah.
and Brookside, again, Phil Redmond, producer of both of those and writer. He changed the face of television because that's why Brookside was gritty and realistic.
Yeah.
And what was the next gritty and realistic program to come along, which people don't realize? Then EastEnders.
Yeah.
This started with Grange Hill.
Yeah.
Grange Hill, Brookside, EastEnders. And of course, then Coronation Street had to chuck up its game because it was
Yeah.
like Fairyland North before that, you
Yeah.
know. So it is very interesting that Grange Hill, did start all that because it was so naturalistic. And if I was walking around in the streets, and people recognized me when I was doing Grange Hill, which a lot of people did, because it was a very popular
Yeah.
program. I think we used to get about 12 million viewers. I mean, it's
Yeah.
incredible for a program, and it was repeated as well
Yeah.
on BBC Two, and got more viewers than
Yeah.
Nationwide, which it was. So it's very popular. So if people recognize me, they would always say, "Oh, you're in that awful children's program where the children speak so badly, you know." And I thought, "Yeah, mate, I'll tell you what, it's real. That's
Yeah.
why."
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? That's why parents didn't like it.
No.
It wasn't just a case of, oh, well, my child might do that. It's, what those parents didn't know is their children were already doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you've mentioned there about Hopwood's character and the fact that, he did want to be sort of beyond, not necessarily the same level as the kids, but he wanted the kids to see that he wasn't a monster. He was a person. He was a human being. But because there's a bit where Hopwood's talking to Tucker about choosing his options, and Tucker says to him, "Well, I thought we were supposed to be able to choose our options. We were supposed to be able to pick them." And Hopwood said, "Well, you are, provided you choose the right ones. You know, so it's like it's like saying, you know, Hopwood's there saying, well, yeah, I fully agree with what you're saying to me here, but unfortunately, I don't like the system either. But that's the way the system is, you know. Providing you pick the options you're supposed to choose, you know, he's basically saying that. Because the other thing as well, when they were bring at the time, it was when school uniform was optional as well in Grangehill, and there was a meeting. The PTA had a meeting to decide whether to bring back school uniform. And when I watched it the other day, when they said, raise your hands if you think, you know, all those in favour of bringing back school uniform, Mr. Upwood doesn't raise his hand again.
Good for him.
So, brilliant. Okay, so that was because Series 4, for whatever reason, you're not listed as being in as many episodes as you were. Series 3, but then Series 5, you're in a lot in Series 5. Now, like I can say, it's IMDb is where I get my research from, so it's not It's not the most.
Well, they've got me listed as doing 3 episodes of General Hospital. I did loads of episodes. I was a semi-regular in the afternoon program and did the evening program. You know, it's annoying. You know, and they've got me in other things. Where I did Up the Elephant Round the Castle, for instance. They got me down for 1 series. You know, and I was in 2. It's like it's just annoying.
All right, okay. So then Series 5. Now, this is the first series I remember watching of Grangehill. I would have been 6 years old when it was first on. And this is where we had the thing, Roland locking himself in the toilet, Mr. Upwood trying to get him out, and he wouldn't move. But then obviously Zamo and Jonah threw the stink bomb through the window to get Roland out. And as well, obviously, by this point as well, Gwyneth Powell has come on board, as you mentioned before.
We knew each other before.
Right.
We were old friends. We had worked in a programme together.
Right.
Yeah. Called Beryl's Lot. Right. And we had such a laugh in that. And we were rehearsing in London. It was shot up in Leeds, but we were rehearsing in London. And why we became good friends is, she was playing the girlfriend of one of the characters, and I was the son of Beryl. And for some reason, I can't remember what happened, but I was supposed to have a broken arm. And in rehearsals, I just used to pretend I had a broken arm, and I don't know. We just found it very funny one day. We couldn't stop giggling. And the director sent us home.
Wow.
Yeah, sent us home. And of course, we just thought that was hilarious. And we both live in Brighton, you know, and so we came all the way home laughing our heads off. Now we became, you know, firm friends after that. And, you know, I knew her for many a year.
She was a
damn good actress. And an actor.
Yeah. I mean, like Gwyneth came on the podcast, and I've said this before, like, I didn't think it would ever be possible for me to fall in love with a woman in her 70s, but she was just the nicest person, wasn't she? You know, and everyone else who said that at Grangehill, when you were doing a scene in her office, you felt like you'd been sent to the head teacher's office.
Yes, definitely. It was made for that part.
And Series 5 is when Gripper first became really prominent as well. Although we'd been in it before, this really became, he started to become really prominent. And there's a scene where he'd been bullying the first years for money, and Zamo and Jonah go to Mr. Hopwood and tell him this. But Mr. Hopwood's like, well, what do you want me to do about it? Basically, he said, if I go to him, it's your word against his. But then Mr. Hopwood then realises, hang on, if he's been bullying kids today, he'll have loads of money on him. So Mr. Upwood gets him to turn out his pockets, and he's got money on him. Now, this is 1982. How much money do you think Gripper's got on him for Mr. Hopwood to suspect that he has actually been bullying the kids?
About £2 or something.
He says to him, when he empties his pockets, Mr. Hopwood says, do you normally go around with £1.50 and change?
I wasn't far out.
So anyway, Mr. Upwood tells him to go and give the money to the school fund, mate. And I just think that's great. Do you normally go around with £1.50 on you? Yeah. Yeah, it would be the answer now, wouldn't it? Yeah, of course. And there was also the relationship started, I think, between Suzanne Ross and Mr. Hopwood, because there was always that dynamic. And I think because Suzanne hated authority, she saw Mr. Hopwood as sort of being less authoritarian than everyone else, even though we had to and do his job. And this is another thing of its time where, you know, unemployment was rife, you know, chances of getting a job weren't always great. And Suzanne Ross says to him, she'd been bunking off school, basically, and Mr. Hopwood was talking to her about bunking off school. And then she said she didn't see the point of school, she didn't see the point of homework, because you don't get extra dole money for having O-levels. And, you know, it's that thing of Grange Hill showing things from a kid's point of view. It's the fact that, you know, after school, you're going to have to try and get a job. And in the early 80s, there wasn't always a great chance of that, was there? And then, you know, as we say, Suzanne had been bunking off, and then Mr. Hopwood caught her working in a shop when she was too young to be working there, basically. So he had to tell the manager that she was underage, but he also said he wouldn't report it, take it any further type thing. He'd report her for the truant and the bunking off, but not for that, provided that she came to school regularly. And she did, but she didn't always wear a school uniform when she was there, just to be that little bit more, that little bit rebellious, still keeping that rebellious streak in there. And like I said, there was the bit with it, you started working as well with Mark Savage, this really becoming really prominent.
My favourite character, I have to say.
Just how good was Mark?
Well, I thought Stebson was just a fabulous character, and he was such a nice boy. I remember we in those days, we were in BBC Television Centre, and they all used to be in a big changing room together. They did the boys and the girls, and then, you know, we all had our own dressing rooms. But I remember once he wouldn't come on the set because he had a dog bite on his neck. And it was so sweet. He was so shy.
Oh, no way.
And I thought, what a sweetie. And there he was playing this bully.
Yeah.
And there he was. He didn't come out of the changing room. Oh, bless him, you know. It was so funny. I thought he was great.
I'm gonna have to look for that episode to see if there's any, like, if he's got his neck covered in any way. Like, I'll have to look out for that one. Oh, brilliant! Now, there's another bit again. Pogo Patterson again. Pogo was really obnoxious, wasn't he? In his younger years, like, he was quite obnoxious. And there's a bit where they're talking about their options again, and what they want to do when they leave school. And Pogo says that the boys should get to choose their options first, because they have to go to work when they leave school, and all the women have to worry about is staying at home, looking after their houses. So someone says, what about the women who aren't married? Now, this is Pogo Patterson says this. Well, that's their fault, isn't it? They should make sure they get a husband. And Suzanne Ross hits him. Right. Pogo tells Mr. Hopwood, and can you guess what Mr. Hopwood's response was when Pogo says Suzanne had hit him after this conversation?
Well, I think he'd be on Suzanne's side, wouldn't he?
He said, yeah, and you deserved it as well.
Yeah,
and there's one, I think, sort of Mr. Hopwood's most famous storyline that he was involved with. Can you guess what I'm going to say?
Claire Scott,
yeah. Okay.
That was the most controversial episode, I think, of all time.
I think it would have been, it was really, really controversial.
And I'll tell you a funny story about it.
Can you explain what it was, first of all, then?
I can't remember really the lead up to it, but I remember it's about her diary.
Yeah. Claire had developed a bit of a crush on Mr. Hopwood.
Yes. Yes. So, and her mother finds the diary under the bed.
Yeah.
And this pertains to the story I was going to tell you.
Right. Okay.
That obviously it was a very contentious storyline, a very difficult line to tread, as it were.
Yeah.
And they were very careful with the dialogue.
Uh-huh.
And they changed it and had to soften the dialogue
right.
a little bit. But it was very funny because there was a kind of double entendre in the diary as the mum's looking at it, and you hear Claire's voiceover reading uh-huh. out. And I can't remember the exact, but it's something like she said, she went out with Stuart
Great.
Hopwood to the pictures, as we'd call it in those days, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he took me back to his flat. He put on the hi-fi, poured a couple of drinks, and gave me one.
Yeah, well, right.
They were so trying to not do anything like that. And I realized when it came out, of course, it could have been taken another way. So I thought, after all the care they'd taken with the dialogue, it always made me laugh. That, so yes.
Yeah.
So the very thing they didn't want to say, they kind of said it.
I watched that episode yesterday, and it's funny you just mentioned the drinks, because the drink that she mentioned was shandy.
Shandy. Oh. Shandy. Right, there you go. A couple of shandies, and he gave me.
Yeah. So yeah, so Mr. Hopwood had realized that there was a bit of a crush developing, and he actually told Claire to stay away from him as well. And like you say, the Mrs. Scott found the diary.
Yeah, because he comes to school.
Yeah,
doesn't he?
Mr. Yeah. Scott comes bounding in.
It's funny because he was an actor who was the brother of someone I was at drama school with.
Oh,
so,
right.
So I knew him as well, you know.
Yeah.
And he was, again, a proper actor. So I was really glad that it's a good actor coming to play that part. Yeah.
Yeah. He comes in and he throws Hoppy up against the wall, doesn't he, and starts having a go.
The wall, I have to tell you, that was a problem because it shook. Because that was the problem, because I had to not be thrown against the wall. I had to make it look so I was thrown against the wall, because the scenery was sort of someone holding at the back.
Amazing. Amazing. And obviously, you know, he said he was going to get him sacked and all
yeah.
that. And obviously, Mr. Hopwood obviously has got no clue what's going on.
No,
at this point.
That was a very big story. I mean, it's an amazing story to put in a children's program,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. Definitely. And obviously, he is protesting his innocence. And then the thing with this story is, when Mrs. McCluskey asks Claire about it the first time, she keeps the lie going. She doesn't.
Oh, right. I couldn't remember that.
She doesn't backtrack straight away. And in the end, Claire only sees sense when Suzanne had spoken to her. So when Suzanne spoke to her and told her to tell the truth, that's when, you know, it comes out that she'd made it up. And Claire's parents did eventually apologise. And Mr. Hopwood kept his job. And that was all neatly wrapped up in one episode. I think.
Oh, amazing.
I think
amazing.
If that was now, that would last. That would carry on, wouldn't it? That would go on.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, it points to the fact of what great characters Claire Scott and Suzanne were.
Yeah.
And Susan Tully in those days struck me as such an intelligent girl. You know, she was the one I would, you know, have, you know, quite serious conversations with. You
yeah.
know, I wasn't surprised at all that she went on to be such a respected and great director. What a wonderful career path for her. She was a lovely girl to talk to.
Well, when Gwyneth was on, she said exactly the same what you've just said there. The fact that Susan Tully would talk to her about like films as well. The films
yes.
that she'd seen, you know, and how they were made and stuff like that. It wasn't just about what was going on. It was all like, you could tell that she would do something.
Also, another point that comes into my head is that a lot of these, really, they changed television at that time, because most things were very northern, funnily enough,
right.
Before Grainshaw came along. And one of the reasons was there was a new kind of drama school where normal kids could go to without in the evenings, and it was called the Anna Scher School.
Great, yeah.
And it was based in Islington in North London. And what they did when they cast is they didn't go, some of the kids were from Italia Conti, you know, and the normal kind of schools.
Yeah.
But they took a lot of kids from Anna Scher. And Anna Scher was like real gritty and improvised, and they did, and so really, this had a massive influence, and a lot of the kids were from Anna Scher, and so they were all normal kids from North London, a lot of them. And so that's why the acting style changed, and it was such a dramatic thing. And of course, Phil Redmond, you know, comes along at the right time with this fantastic idea for Grange Hill, you know. And also, I don't know if you know, but Phil Redmond, in those days, they gave him, when he was on the dole, it was, you know, because he wanted to write And they said you can have 6 months on the dole and write. And he wrote, and he did Doctor on the Go first of all, I think, for ITV, and then he had this idea for Grange Hill. And of course, he had a lot of power as well because he didn't give all the rights away. I think there was,
right.
so he had a lot of power in the way he wanted to do it. And you've got to hand it to him because absolutely brilliant. I do think, I mean, I'm only saying, obviously, I was in the early series, but I think the real classic Grange Hills are the first sort of, you know, 7 or 8, 9 series. It was a kind of different thing. Something classic about those earlier ones, and something also about the fact that, as I say, you used to have this little bit of filming outside, which is really funny because we used to film all the outside stuff in the summer.
Yeah.
And we'd be in the studio till February. So suddenly you were seeing, you might see a kid whose voice hadn't broken. Suddenly it broke. Or sometimes they'd come in with a different colour top on.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Some people had grown 2 inches from the time it got
hairstyles and all kinds. Yeah.
It was very, very funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we'll move on then to series 6, which was your final series. But this is, I think this is the first time Grange Hill was really, really hard hit. And this is the bit with Gripper's racism, the racism storyline. Because how did you feel when you found out that this was going to get covered in a kids' television programme?
I thought it was fantastic. What was the name? We had the lovely Indian.
Randy Singh.
Yeah. Well, he was such a great character and such a nice boy. And I thought it was groundbreaking at the time. I mean, also, you were talking about women's issues. They used to talk about periods. They used to talk about everything it could relate to, you know.
Yeah.
Smoking, as you said, you know, and of course it went on later after I left with the big drugs thing with Zamo. I will say something that strikes me. You mentioned Jonah and Zamo earlier.
Yeah.
Now, the most controversial thing, and I don't know how much you know about this, but Jonah was the most popular character. I mean, he was an incredibly charismatic child.
Uh-huh.
He suddenly left after, I think, 2 series. And there was some controversy about the producer. Why they got rid of him, I never understand, because to me, he was going to take over from Todd Carty. And suddenly he left the show. And this was one of the most controversial things. And I don't really know myself why it was. He either between his parents and the producer. I really don't know what happened there. But to me, I thought he was such a great kid. And I was really surprised that he left the show. Sorry, just to mention.
No, well, do you know what? I'd actually heard a little birdie had told me that you weren't happy when that happened, to be honest. So I was going to ask you about that one later on. Jonah, I've said, because I've spoken to Lee Spark on here, Jonah was my favourite character ever.
Yes. There you go. You agree. So I've never discussed it with anybody. So that's interesting. You should say that. But it just came to me when you said Jonah and Zamo. I thought, yes, Jonah. You know what? I know something happened. There was a swimming pool incident or something. But I don't know either if his parents wanted him to be more in it or something.
So, I don't know. He left, and then it had already been written, hadn't it? The next series, the next scripts had obviously been written. So then they had to change it. Then again, it was Anthony Minghella, wasn't it? Was the script editor and had to change it all. And I've said many times on this podcast, he actually wrote about that incident.
Oh, did he?
In his autobiography, it's actually mentioned. Yeah, I don't know if names are mentioned, but I know he writes about that incident.
Well, it was what it was like. Suddenly, Todd Carty looked gone. Do you know what I mean? Because he really had something, that kid. You know, I remember. Look, that's 40 years ago. You know.
Yeah.
He was special without a doubt, and something went wrong there. But I don't really know what the politics of it were.
Okay. So so it was the racism, of course, in series 6, and Mr. Hopwood stops one of the very first sort of gang fights that was taking place between, or about to take place. There was Gripper's gang and there was Woody's gang, and then he actually spoke to the class about the fact that there was sort of racist overtones. You know, he was picking up that there was racist overtones going on. And then there was another thing with Suzanne Ross, where Stewpot told Mr. Hopwood that Suzanne was planning on running away because she was fed up with everything as Suzanne usually was, to be fair. So he told her that he was looking to get her moved onto the media studies course, which she was actually moved onto the media studies course. And he told Suzanne that he sort of implied that he'd sorted it out himself, but he hadn't. Someone else had been put on the wrong course or something. So a place had become available. So he told Suzanne, and Suzanne went into the, she found this out. She had to go. And then she came out of the toilets with her hair all done.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
All the punk rocker yeah. stuff. And
that was
and
quite
everything.
A famous scene as well, wasn't it? Yeah.
But
yeah,
she's great. Brilliant. She's brilliant in that scene, isn't she, as well?
Wonderful.
And there's the bit where the same episode was when it was the open day, the same episode as when Suzanne did that. And Mr. Hopwood's trying to get Gripper to do something for the open day. And Gripper said he was going to make wooden guns and weapons and things. But Mr. Hopwood, because Mr. Hopwood's Mr. Hopwood, he still wants to do the best by Gripper. Although he might not necessarily like him, but he wants the lad to show what he can do. So he says to him, look, there's a block of wood, carve something. And it's nothing, but at least he's done something. So he goes the open day with it, but no one's paying him any attention because of Glenroy's Rastafarian project going on.
Oh,
and obviously,
God.
Gripper doesn't like that because obviously Gripper was a racist. So Gripper then sabotages the whole thing.
They're great storylines, aren't they?
They are, but like that's part of the build-up then to the big fight scene then between all the lads, the two gangs, basically, Gripper's gang and the black lads. When you watch that scene, because that scene gets broken up by Mr. Hopwood, Mr. Keating, and Bullet Baxter as well. I watched that the other day. That looked absolute carnage, that scene. It looked
very real.
Was there much choreography involved?
Do you know, I can't remember, but I remember everyone used to go for it, really.
Yeah.
I just used to go for it. As I said, because we all love the drama. We love all those bits.
Honestly, it looks absolute bedlam when you watch it, because there's about five or six different fights going on in that scene. And then Gripper gets expelled. And then the end of that series was the march for Scruffy, when Scruffy McGuffy had been suspended, and all the kids were coming from different angles, and all the staff were like sentry guards on the gates looking for where I say all the staff, there was about six of you, to be honest. and there was hundreds and hundreds of kids coming, and then obviously Mr. McGuffey got his job back. Now, after that, we never saw Mr. Hopwood again. What was your reason for leaving?
Well, what happened was that they had, in those days, they didn't used to contract you until very near the program being started, right? So these days, you would be contracted a year ahead or 6 months ahead or something like that. So they had said to me informally, will you do the next series? And I said, yes, short of going to Hollywood or something, you know, I'd be very interested to do it. So they wrote me in all 18 episodes.
Wow.
Well, about a month before it was due to start, my agent rang me and said, I've just had Grange Hill on the phone and I've told them that you're not doing any more. And I went, pardon? I said, perhaps just do one more series, you know, because I had two young kids. You know?
Yeah.
And she said, no, you don't want to play a nice teacher for the rest of your life, do you? And I said, well, no, but, you know, and she said, well, can I come and talk to you about it? She said, yes. I went up to London. I sat with her and she said, Brian, you've got to leave this now. You don't want to be stuck here forever. It's 4 years you've been doing it. So you've got to go off in a different direction now. And she said, unfortunately, she said, they were very angry and you won't ever work for this producer or this director ever again, which was true. And so I was very conflicted about it, you know, because I felt very sad, but I had given myself to it for 4 years. And she felt at that time it was very important for me to go in a different direction. Wow. And when you look at it in a way, it was the right decision for
Yeah.
me personally, because immediately I went off and did lots of different things. You know, I did a comedy series, you know, and went in a completely different direction. So in a sense, it was right. And if you look at Gwyneth, for instance, Gwyneth was stayed in it for 11 years.
Yeah.
And in a way, I'm not saying it killed her career, but she was a very, very accomplished actress. And so, you know, it's a very difficult
Yeah.
decision. And I fell out, you know, Phil Redmond. Well, I thought, how are they gonna, I wonder what they've done with me. And I watched the next series to see. And they said, they thought of the worst, most boring place to send me to. And they said, he's gone to Milton Keynes. That's what. So they were so pissed off with me, you know.
Yeah.
And I really for years I knew that Phil Redmond was really angry with me.
Yeah.
And funny enough, we only made it up at the last, we have these reunions every
Yeah.
now and again, you must know. I think the last one was the 35th anniversary.
Right.
And I sat near him and chatted to his wife and that, and I explained to him what happened, and I didn't have a choice in the matter because my agent, a very prestigious agent, and I had to take her advice. She was giving me her career advice, if you like,
Yeah.
and so that was why. So it was, I was, you know, it's very, I was very, very sad to leave, and
Yeah.
I was a shock to me when she said,
Yeah.
"You're not," because I thought, "Oh my God," because it was such a good job, because you know, you started in wherever it was, June, and it went round to February, but you weren't in it all year like a normal soap. So you had 2 or 3 months off to do other work. And also it got repeated. So it was, you know, pretty good money.
Yeah.
So I was a bit, I was choked myself. So that's the story.
Oh, right, okay. But what's interesting about that is Grange Hill then replaced Mr. Hopwood with Mr. Howard, which meant there probably wasn't, he didn't need to
And
change
all my
scripts.
dialogue.
And they literally just changed a few letters
I
in the
know.
surname.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Hopwood to Mr. Howard.
Yeah.
Okay. So then after Grange Hill, again, you know, when I said before about the list of the gentle touch, Minder, which must have been great working with George Cole anyway.
Well, funnily enough, I it was great. And you know, I did Midsummer Murders a few years ago, and he played my dad, and it was his last appearance on television. And it
Wow.
was one of the best, I have to say, it was one of the best Midsummer Murders. It's called Shot at Dawn, and I know it's one of John Nettles' favorite. It's a wonderful episode, and he played my dad in it, and he was so moving,
Yeah.
and what a lovely man. And I, in a sense, it was like a circle had been completed, you know,
Yeah.
to him all those years later
Yeah.
was absolutely lovely. Yeah, so I did all those, you know, all those kind of programs.
But you
Yeah.
did you did comedies as well, didn't you? Because you did Up the Elephant Round the Castle.
Well, I did, after that, I did a series called Full House, which a lot of people don't remember,
Right,
but
I'll be honest. That's the first thing I remember seeing you in after Grange Hill. And
well, I tried to be a very different character, as you might.
I can vividly remember one episode of it where they think that the wife is having sextuplets, if I remember rightly. That was the storyline behind it. And it turned out that she wasn't. But Roger Sloman was in that as well, wasn't he?
Good actor, very good actor.
And he was
Yeah.
in the first series of Grange Hill.
Oh yes, he was. That's right. Also, Sean Arnold was the headmaster in the first series, and
Yeah.
I worked with him on Bergerac. So,
Right. Yeah, of course, yeah.
and I sadly he died, and I went to his. This is was it earlier this year or last year?
Last year, I think it was,
Or
yeah.
was it this year? There was a, well, we went to the Actors' Church and had a memorial service for him, which was fabulous. And John Nettles spoke really, really movingly about him, because Sean was a fantastic
Yeah.
character. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Roger Sloman. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah. And the thing about Up the Elephant Round the Castle, when I was looking at the cast, a lot of the cast there sort of like not necessarily cut their teeth, but became known for other characters like Anita Dobson, Sue Nichols, and
Absolutely. Absolutely.
John Barden as well, Brian Hall, you know, just our people.
Johnny Barden, I was in rep with him, with John Nettles.
Right? Wow.
What a character he
Yeah.
got. And I, do you know what? He was an accountant, and he became an actor when he was like 32 or something.
Wow.
And
Brilliant.
he was a real character. Yeah,
I think
lovely. I knew Johnny very well.
and he's brilliant in everything he's in.
Yeah, of course, Sue Nichols was the. That's the first time I worked with Sue Nichols, and of course, little did I know that I'd be working closely with her later on, some years later.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And then, you know, just so much, as you said, you know, the bill and EastEnders we get in as well. Have I got that?
Well, at the time I was disappointed because what happened there, I was married to an Asian girl in it. And she went to the, I was her husband, a very middle class husband. And she went to the EastEnders producers because she had her own theatre troupe that she wanted to take to India.
Right.
And she said, could she have 3 months off to take her troupe to India? And they said no. So she said, right, I'm leaving. So suddenly that was me finished as well. But in a way, it was great because I never would have got the part in Coronation Street. Like.
Okay, so we have to talk then about Corrie. We have to, like, now obviously you became known as for Richard Hillman, but you'd been in it years before, hadn't you, as another character.
As a social worker, Donald Worthington.
Worthington, and then this, I can't believe it was like 20 years ago either. It's so fresh in my mind, the storyline, the fact that you became, you know, got the part.
They've repeated it on ITV3, classic Corrie, so they've repeated the whole thing. So I've had quite a lot of, people getting hold of me.
I love the fact that something in the year 2002 and 2003 is now considered classic as well. So, you know, you got the part of Richard Hillman, Norman Bates with a briefcase, Tricky Dicky, all the names that came out. But when you first got the part, was that explained to you that this was what was going to happen, or did that sort of develop?
No, really, the whole thing is a bit mad because first of all, I when I went to audition for it, I thought, I hope they don't make me read it in Northern accent, you know, or anything like that. So, and on the day, funnily enough, I had a really bad tooth abscess and I had to ring up a dentist and go to get an emergency antibiotics from a chemist before I got on the train. I had to go all the way up. And I thought, this is a waste of time, you know, because I couldn't believe that people who were in Coronation should be really Northern, you know.
Yeah.
I thought, EastEnders is my drop and I've had my chance and that hasn't happened, but never mind. This is a waste of time. So I went up there and there were 20 other people up for the part. And the guy before me was one of those people, you could hear the thing going on, and you heard him going, you know, as he came out, like, they thought, oh, blimey, he's got it, you know. He's anyway, I went in and I read, there were just like 7 or 8 lines to read, really. It wasn't much. And then they said, oh, we could quite like that, Brian. Would you do it in Northern? I thought, oh, God, here we go. So I read it. And they said, okay, thank you very much. And so a week and a half later, I've got a beach hut down in Brighton, and I was sitting down on a Friday night with a glass of wine, you know, my phone went, and I thought, oh, this, my agent wants me to go to a commercial on Monday. I'm not going to answer it. And then eventually I answered it. She said, do you remember you went up for Coronation Street about a couple of weeks ago? And I said, yes. She said, well, they've just offered you a 6-month contract. I went, what? You know? So I went up there, and really it started off, and the character was a bit cheesy, you know. And then I was going to be chopped, you know. It came out in the Sun, with, you know, 6 of us, you know, Sally, Lindsay and me and some others were all going to get the axe. Right. But then they got rid of the producer and the executive producer and the producer, that they sacked them and they brought in a new team. Carolyn Reynolds for the executive producer and Kieran Roberts as the new producer, who knew the show very well.
Uh-huh.
And what they did was they kind of saw something in my character. And they decided to home in on my character and go back to the old Longburn storylines.
Yeah.
So he was always going to be a dodgy character, but nowhere near, I think, a serial killer at that at the beginning. Yeah. So certainly I knew nothing about it anyway. You know?
Yeah.
And so gradually the character developed. And I think if I contributed anything to it early on, I thought very carefully about his relationship with Gail, because I thought everyone's going to think he's a dodgy guy. So I tried to make him a very sincere, loving the family and her. And actually, that built up a fabulous, firm relationship for the mad person to jump off from. You see what I mean? I also thought, when people talked about psychopaths, be like that, they always used to say, one of the things that stuck with me was, do you know, he always said hello if you met him in the street, always washed his car on Sunday. So I had that element to it that I think I brought to it. And so he was a guy, he wasn't a hateful character, he was a character you could love to hate. Also, the writing was spectacular. They actually also put a lot of dark humor around the character, which is fantastic. You know, one of my favorite bits, which I always say, is when he's going after Audrey, trying to convince her that she's got Alzheimer's. You know, he's going after her and he's walking down the street, and they meet in Coronation Street. And as he passes, she says to him, "Oh, hello, Richard." And as he goes past, he goes, "Goodbye, Audrey." And they did lots of stuff like, so it was a fantastic character to play, but it built. And the other thing that built up was, I have to thank my wife for this, is that when you're doing dramatic stuff on television, when you look at the lines they give you, there's exclamation marks after, you know, if he's threatening someone, exclamation marks. And she said, no, don't do it like that. She said, don't do it like that. Just be very cool, very quiet, and just look. You know? And I remember at the end of one episode, a director said, I was threatening Norris outside in the corner. He was at where the corner shop is, I think, or something, or the cabin. And I was ending the episode, and I said something and looked at him. And then the director said to me at the end of this episode, "Now give him your look." And I went, "What look?" He said, "The look you do." And I said, "What look?" He said, "You do this look." I was like, "Oh, right, okay. Oh, blimey." And it was something that I would just developed, you know. And so gradually the character came together with all these different parts, you know. As I say, well, one of the writers called John Fay, he used to write for Brookside and was also a poet earlier. He wrote some amazing stuff for me, which I mean, really just made the character so many twists and turns. And I know there are lots of fabulous characters who have been on since, you know, playing murderers and such. And I know there's one at the moment, but it's very hard to beat the old Richard Hillman story, because
It is.
it was so clever, and he wasn't like a normal
No. I think
hateful.
because no one saw it coming, did they? Because the first one, like, no one was expecting it.
Oh, well, Dougie was the first one. When he fought, you know, that he leaves him to die, doesn't call the ambulance. And that was brilliant. I mean, there was some brilliant. In fact, the first time that I ever knew that it was going to be a central character was, I was out at a pub with the script editor, one of the script editors, and she said to me, "Has anybody talked to you about your character? What's going to happen to it?" I said, "No, what?" And she said, "Well, you know, they're going to make you the central character. You're going to be in the center of the show." And I said, "No, what?" She said, "Yes, you've got a special 1 hour episode coming up. And it's going to set everything off." I said, "Oh, well, that's fantastic." You know, but no, I didn't know. And that was an episode where he leaves Dougie to die, and there's a party going on, and he's skulking around the streets of Weatherfield. It was a fantastic episode, and it just set everything up. But you know, what wonderful, what a lovely opportunity it was.
But then obviously you just said, was it 6 months you were offered the first?
Yeah, it went on 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, because then when you get that storyline, you must know this is going to end soon. I'm going
Yeah,
to right.
yes.
Okay, so how do you feel when that sort of comes
Oh,
around then?
I don't. You don't have any power as an actor in that in those situations in soaps. But I did say at the beginning when I went up there, because I lived, you know, on the South Coast, that I was never going to move up with my family, and 2 years was my maximum.
Right,
You know,
okay.
also because I was an established actor for 30 years before that, I didn't kind of fear leaving the soap. You know, because I knew I was established, and hopefully my career would carry on. Although it's very difficult, isn't it? You know, lots of actors stay in soaps, and I understand because of the insecurity of it all. You know, so I guess I was in a better position in that I was, if you like, a fairly established actor, and it gave me a leg up. I nearly had very big, like Hollywood things happen to me that fell through. After that, Where the Heart Is picked me up, and I did 3 years in that. And you know, I my career hasn't gone, like, you know, soared, but it's been very nice, thank you very much, and I'm working. So that was because of Coronation Street. And how funny that the two things that my agent was worried about was me being typecast as this nice teacher, 40 years ago. And then 20 years ago, they were worried about me then being typecast as a serial killer.
Do, on that, do you find that you might get typecast as the serial killer? Because only because when I looked again on IMDb, a couple of things after, certainly in the aftermath of Richard Hillman, you did the busted TV movie where you were Sinister Santa.
That was a one-off, wasn't it?
Yeah, but then you had a return to Richard Hillman in the Coronation Street Knight's Tale as well, didn't you?
Well, the trouble is that I wanted not to be involved in anything like that, but then Kieran Roberts, the producer, who loved my storyline, and you know, it was the first time that Corey had won a BAFTA on the back of that story. He rang me up personally to ask me to do that as a favor to him. And I also knew the director who was doing it. So I thought, not many people are going to see this anyway. Do you know what I mean? So I did it. And it was actually a real laugh. And very, very funny doing that. The other thing that he got me back for was the Coronation Street musical, which is another... Oh, mate, that's a story and a half. But anyway,
What I like about Knight's Tale is the fact that when we first see your character, he comes out the water.
Yes.
And he says something like, 7 years, however many months, he said, that's my new record for holding my breath underwater. And I just think that's tremendous. He was called Dickie, wasn't he? Dickie the boatman, he was called.
Yeah,
wasn't actually Richard Hillman, yeah, because Norris was like, they're very, very similar, aren't they, those two? Like, no. Yeah, so that's what I was saying. Do you find that you got, like, sort of people expected you to be that sort of character after Coronation Street?
Yeah, I suppose so. But in a way, it was quite nice because I did. If I had a plan, which is very difficult in my profession to have any sort of logical plan, it was to get known on television in order to do the theatre, which is my first love. You know, so I started off in the theatre, did an awful lot of theatre, and so that's what happened. So really. I've done the odd television thing, but I've done a lot of theatre, a lot of lovely tours, you know, and doing some lovely thrillers. And also, I mean, I've done musicals. I did Guys and Dolls, you know, at West End and tour, Rocky Horror Show, some fabulous big musicals that I've done. Lots of stuff. I worked at the National Theatre, you know. That never would have happened without Richard Hillman. None of that would have happened. And lots of lovely tours and things that I've done, which I absolutely love. And, of course, I am typecast every Christmas. And how lucky, for 20 years, I've been able to go and do a panto at Christmas, which pays for my year, but which is such fun. And also it's humbling because I then work with a lot of actors and actresses, very talented, more talented than me, who can really sing and dance, you know. And it makes me realise how lucky I've been because I haven't had a thunderingly soaring career, but it's been a very comfortable and a lovely career and a privilege to do what I do. And I'm reminded of it every time I go and do a panto at Christmas. I absolutely love it. I'm doing Peter Pan this year at the Plaza in Stockport, which is a beautiful theatre, doing Captain Hook, which is my favourite character because he's so stupid. So that's because of Richard Hillman.
Yeah.
And also, how many people remember me? So if I look back, I've done two very iconic characters, it seems to me. You know, Grange Hill, which people still come up to me today, and can't look anything like I used to look with that big mop of hair. But people come up to me and remember me from Grange Hill, and it's lovely. And I always say, well, you get extra points for that. Thank you very much.
Brilliant.
Also, people think I was their teacher at school. This is the funny thing. People say, excuse me, do you mind me asking, were you a teacher at my school? And I say, no, but I was a teacher in Grange. And I go, oh, yes, that's it. Oh, I see.
Brilliant. Now, just going back to Richard Hillman, and I promise I won't talk to any more about him in this one. Was there much public reaction to Richard Hillman?
Well, I always get asked that question, and there's lots of public reaction, but because, I don't know if you remember at the time, but in EastEnders there was a guy called Trevor, who was a terrible character. I think he put an iron in his girlfriend's face, you know, or whatever. I mean, Richard Hillman, he couldn't help doing what he did. He was doing it for his family. And also there was dark humor around him. So more often than not, people always want to let you know that that they know who you were,
yeah.
And, but they might do it by, you know, a guy, you know, might pass me in the airport, you know, if I'm traveling
Yeah.
or something, murderer. it tends to be quite funny, you know, and some people are very nice. And just, you know, if I'm on a train, sometimes people will just come and say, excuse me, I didn't want to say anything, but thank you very much. It was a lovely car. I really enjoyed you in Coronation Street, which is lovely. But occasionally I have had physical things.
Right.
The worst thing that happened was when I was doing Where the Heart Is, we went out to a pub of an evening with the other actors to social, you know, as a social
Uh-huh.
evening. And we went to a quiz night. And as we left this pub, this was in Holmfirth in Yorkshire, we were in a car and someone threw a brick at the car, shouting out, "Hillman!" like this. And it was a real shock, you know.
Wow.
You know, the guy driving, we stopped, you know, and we thought, oh God, what was that? You know, just a ridiculous thing, you know. And occasionally, you know, I was attacked by a woman once when I was in Scotland. She came and hit me over the head with her umbrella. yeah. But mostly, I would say people who really knew the show just liked the character. And it's almost a jokey thing, you know
Yeah.
what I mean? You're a naughty, naughty boy. And
Yeah.
also, a lot of people say to me, why didn't you kill Gail? And I said, well, I tried my hardest, you know. Poor old Gail.
Oh, I just didn't like Richard Hillman because he killed Maxine off, to be honest. That was...
Well, that's what rocketed the show, because to lose a big character like
Yeah.
that. And I remember I was in Italy at the time around a pool, and I had a phone call from... because I was having a nice couple of weeks off. And Tracy, Maxine... rang me and said, Brian, I've just heard how I'm leaving, and it's fantastic for you, not so fantastic for me, but you're gonna kill me with a crowbar, you know, you're gonna murder me. And of course that was what rocketed the thing, the fact, and they made a big thing about who is he gonna kill and all of
yeah.
that. And of course that became a fantastic scene. The way it was written was fabulous. And you know, coming up behind to first of all, to whack old what's her name first,
Oh,
and
poor
then
Emily, yeah.
poor old Emily. Oh, I would say saved by the hairspray on her wig. And of course, the immortal line when Maxine comes in is, "You should have stayed at the party, Maxine."
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. If you search Richard Hillman on Google Images, the first picture that comes up is that picture with the crowbar, and
yeah.
it's menacing, I'll be honest.
No, it was a very contentious episode again, because it was right on the watershed, because it was done at the 8:30 to 9 o'clock. So it was just before the watershed, you know.
Yeah.
And there was another, I don't know if you remember, the very first murder that I did was with my ex-wife, Patricia Hillman, where I hit her over the head with a shovel.
Uh-huh.
And that was, again, a very, you know, a very dramatic thing. And we had a bit of a row about it because I tried to change the dialogue and they wouldn't change the dialogue.
Okay.
But on the day when we shot it, because he didn't have any reason to do that, I didn't think, you know, I thought it was
yeah.
such a dramatic thing to do. But we had a grapple and this, that and the other. And she was a wonderful actress. And she said, why don't I spit at you? And I thought, fantastic. So she spat at me, and that gave him the, you know,
yeah.
thing to. So, yeah, but I was... Aren't I lucky to have all these
yeah.
marvellously dramatic moments? You couldn't have more drama as an actor than that,
No.
could you?
No. Okay, now, so we are coming to the end of the interview. And I'm going to ask you the same five or six questions I always ask at the end, and they're all sort of related to Grange Hill. Okay. So recently there's been talk of a Grange Hill movie in the works, Phil Redmond.
I've got nothing to do with that.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. But
yeah.
what do you think of the idea of a Grange Hill movie?
I don't know, really. Yeah, it's lovely for people, I think, you know, but they'll have all moved on, and I'm sure it'll be well scripted. Yeah.
And if you were asked, would we see a return of Mr. Hopwood?
Yes, I would, yeah. I could have been the headmaster, couldn't I?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay. So you might have mentioned this one earlier on, but other than Mr. Hopwood, who was your favourite character in Grange Hill?
Stepson, I think. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Between that and Suzanne.
Yeah. And if you couldn't have played Mr. Hopwood, which other character would you like to have played?
Mrs. McCluskey.
I think you'd have made a great Mrs. McCluskey, I think, to be honest. Okay, so the final question then, Brian. is why do you think there's still such affection for Grange Hill?
Because it was so groundbreaking, so different, and you could relate to it. It was one of the first things that children and teenagers could relate to this programme. And adults loved it as well because it was so different and the dialogue was great and good on Phil Redmond. What a wonderful idea. And particularly those early ones, look at the themes it covered. I think the themes that everybody could relate to. And also, it was a kids' programme. Kids, it was about them. The teachers, I said, you know, only two or three were lucky enough to have, you know, storylines, as it were. They could see something that they could relate to. And it means a lot when you can switch on television and think, oh, I know about bullies. I know about racism. I know about drugs. I know about smoking, you know, and I know about teachers like that.
I mean, that was the thing I always say. I know a lot of parents didn't let their kids watch Grange Hill, but I always say that my parents let me watch it because it was covering those things.
Yes.
So,
good.
You know, I was learning about stuff, and if I wanted to ask them a question about it, I could do. And they
weren't. That's because you don't live in Southeast England.
Tremendous. Brilliant. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great talking to you and hearing your experiences, not only Grange Hill, but as Britain's most hated man, as you were once as well. But no, honestly, it's been brilliant listening to you and talking to you. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
No, not at all. Not at all. And to anyone that's listening, I'll speak to you next time. Cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye.